through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Jake, we're going to try something else here. We're going to do a bit of a State of the Union. It's not going to be an address. We're just looking at where we are right now. Now, today's is going to be on
defense.
Oh, we're
not making an address. I had a speech all ready to go.
Oh, you do? Well, all right then. In that case, there we go. First of all, I do have to sidebar and say that we were talking about April Fools during the break for an important reason, and it is that Michael Strahan may have gotten his gap filled. And that breaks my heart.
Yeah, it looks like he's wearing veneers.
I love Michael Strahan.
Well, that's a signature.
Gap. It's a signature. So people can't tell if it's an April Fool's joke. April Fool's obviously coming up on Thursday. And then Jake was showing us videos of his wife, Brooke, I guess, is the April Fool's master and just pranks him and the kids all day long. And her scaring you was my favorite.
Now, yeah, it's she does it all the time. Like she... April Fool's is a bad day for me. Like, it's not,
Jake's
it's
traumatized.
Not one that I look forward to because I have to be suspicious of everything she does.
You have
that
it
day.
Circled in red on the calendar.
It is, it's a day I live in fear. She enjoys it so much. But she's gotten people with like gum and it's Play-Doh. She's done a lot of, she's been up to a lot of stuff.
Yeah, you showed me one where she froze Jackson's cereal and he got really upset about it. For any parents at home who are thinking of how to prank your kids.
That was great.
You freeze the cereal.
He just woke up. He really didn't understand what was going on. She brought him over there. His favorite cereal at the time was Captain Crunch, and she froze it, and he's trying to eat the cereal, and he can't do it.
And she's just laughing.
So angry. He's so mad, so frustrated about it.
All right. Time for the State of the Union on defense. Now, you wanted to take a look specifically at grouping some of this together as a whole. So rather than, like, State of the Union corner, we're just going to ask ourselves, has the defense gotten better, worse, or are they status quo from a year ago? So, Jake, why don't you kick us off?
Well, this is a part where I believe as you start to address and get towards the draft, you have to think about these things and you have to put in perspective of where they currently are at. What do they need? What is the outlook of this defense moving forward so that you know what to adequately address? And guess what? You don't have a whole lot of capital, right? You draft capital, you got three picks, you might be able to generate some more. I would be really surprised if John Schneider and the Seahawks pulled off a trade with a player to acquire even more draft picks. So I think that they're going to stand pat with the situation that they're in terms of only having three picks and maybe trading down throughout the draft to get some more or to get more volume, unless someone just totally falls to them with that second round pick that it's too good of an opportunity to pass up. What they've done really well is they've addressed a lot of these positions. They have, if you look at the defense right now, there are not a lot of holes on this defense, and I think that's a tip of the cap to John Schneider and Pete Carroll and for addressing the defense. So here's who they've signed. They've signed Akila Witherspoon from the 49ers to play cornerback, a project type of player, but one that that fits the parameters of what they like to do, is a scheme fit. And just came off of his best season from a turbulent career, but had a very good season last year. Carlos Dunlap, we know how important he was to come to Seattle. Benson Mayoa, Kerry Hyder, they finally have solidified in March, heading into April, pass rush. So pass rush is not going to be a need at this point of the offseason. Thank goodness that we're at that point right now. They signed Puna Ford to a two-year contract rather than giving him a tender. And they let go Shaquille Griffin, Jaron Reed, two very, very good players to your defense. And yet they're still out there, Quentin Dunbar and K.J. Wright, who we talked about at the top of the show of K.J. Wright. So you just look at that in and of itself. They are pretty loaded and pretty solidified with where they're at on defense. Stacey, have they gotten better? That's the big question. Have they gotten better in your mind?
I think that the defensive line has a great chance to get better. I liked Carlos Dunlap on the defensive line last year, but don't forget he was only there for half the season. And during that time also was dealing with, it might have been a groin injury. I can't quite remember, but it couldn't totally stay on the field. When he was on the field, he was very effective. So you're now going to get not just a full season with him, but he finally gets a full offseason with his new team. That's huge.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big deal. Kerry Hyder had a great year filling in for Bosa down in San Francisco. And much like Benson Mayoa, he saw the bulk of his production in more recent seasons. But in seasons prior to that, he didn't have a ton of snaps with his team. He wasn't the regular starter. He was getting 40% of snaps as opposed to 70 or so, which is what he had with San Francisco. And when he got more time, he met the bar. He exceeded the bar. He performed very, very well. So I like what they've done with the defensive line. You bring back Puna Ford, and you decide to, from whatever fallout you had from a conversation about your contract, let Jaron Reed go. And it's a bummer they couldn't get anything in return for a trade. I don't know, and this isn't a slight toward Jaron Reed. It's toward that position as a whole. Like, unless it's Aaron Donald, and granted that's a 3-4, It's tough to have that really highly paid defensive tackle be the key difference maker on your team. It's not impossible. Like, that's certainly been the case with a lot of other teams. But I think that they can, if they're going to invest, I'd rather see them do it with an edge rusher. I'd rather see them do it by bringing back Carlos Dunlap, by retaining Benson Mayoa, by hoping that you get development from Alton Robinson. And we haven't even seen Daryl Taylor. So by hoping you get development from him, I'd rather see them invest their resources there. It's a more valuable position typically on their defense. So I like what they've done there. If KJ Wright doesn't come back, I see a step back for the linebacker group. I like the development we saw from Jordan Brooks. Bobby Wagner is Bobby Wagner. But again, this isn't to slight Cody Barton. There's a big difference between a 10-year veteran and someone who's, you know, in their second, third year in the league.
For sure.
That's just a fact.
It's very true, but also that could be a signal of the fact that you're going in a different direction personnel-wise. Then, hey,
right.
2 years ago, you were obsessed with base defense.
Right.
And now you could, 2 years later, now be obsessed with nickel and dime personnel because you've got a really unique secondary and you're trying to find ways to get your high second-round pick Marquise player on the field more often. And Ugo Amadi has stepped up as well during the absence of Marquise Blair. So now you've got two really good secondary players that are very versatile, can be used in a lot of different ways. Maybe you try and get them out on the field more and allow Bobby Wagner and Jordan Brooks to just be the two linebackers that are on the field at all times on all three downs. That could be a situation that you may see if KJ Wright doesn't return to Seattle. So I think there's a couple different ways that you go from here. And if I was to give an answer to that question now, is the group better, worse, or status quo from a year ago? I believe that they are better for the simple fact that they will be more cohesive heading into this season than they were a year ago. Everybody's together. Jamal Adams will now have a full offseason with you. You will have your defensive line, your pass rush solidified heading into the year. And you have the main pieces in place defensively to go out and be better and improve and play at the level that they were playing at the second half of the season. The question marks that you have right now is that outside linebacker position, but Stacey, is that going to be the difference between a Super Bowl win or a Super Bowl loss? I don't think so.
No, but what I'm nervous about more so than that outside linebacker position, because again, like, Jamal Adams has been pretty good with the open field tackles. Teams outside of their division don't run as much. What I'm frankly more nervous about is your cornerback position. I love that Jamal Adams is getting a full offseason with the team. I think that Quandre Diggs and he have been a nice duo, and Jamal Adams is healthier as opposed to playing through shoulder injuries to both shoulders. I'm really nervous about cornerback. I think that it was the right move not to pay Shaquille Griffin. That doesn't mean you aren't worse without him.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah,
no, totally. I fully agree with that. So you have to adequately address that position. I think Akilah Witherspoon is a nice piece to bring in here, but I want to add competition. The reason why is because I want to know if that Akilah Witherspoon is starting from day one, Stacey. It's because he's earned it with his play and that he is ready to take that next step. And he's ready to be even better than the year that he just had in 2020. That there's steady progress being made and that you didn't just bring on a player that's going to continue to be up and down like he was with the San Francisco 49ers. I have strong confidence in DJ Reed and who he is and how he's going to be this season. But that other cornerback spot, I believe, deserves more competition. Bringing in somebody like Quentin Dunbar, I think, would be positive. Bringing in a young, talented rookie that fits all the size requirements that you want and allow him to compete with Witherspoon and Reed, I think would be an extremely positive thing. So that position I still believe does need to be addressed. But overall, you really have your group pretty much solidified, and I think that's a very comfortable position to be in if you're the Seahawks heading into this draft. So I don't think that they're much better than a year ago, but I think that they inherently get better because of the fact that they're more stable heading into this year than they were a year or even 2 years ago.
I'm still real nervous about that pass defense. I am. And maybe it's because they struggled with it so mightily in the first half of the year. And it was wonderful to see them bounce back with Jamal Adams and Carlos Dunlap being the catalyst for that turnaround. Both of those guys are going to be there. And that feels good if you're a Seahawks fan to look at that and see it. But think of a team like L.A. Say that your pass rush can't get by their offensive line. Their offensive line, by the way, last year was one of the top offensive lines in the league. I think they were top five offensive line. So if your defensive line is having a tough go against them, then you got to worry about your secondary. They don't have Jared Goff anymore. They upgraded. They got Matthew Stafford now. Mm-hmm. And they brought in Deshaun Jackson. I don't know how he's going to be, but they still have Cooper Kupp. They still have Robert Woods. I mean, they can still throw the ball down the field. Sean McVay is going to be excited to see what they can open up there. I'm nervous when it comes to games like that against the Rams. When you're facing a good offensive line and a good quarterback, it's not that I don't believe their pass rush improved. I think it did. I think that I expect their defensive line and pass rush to take a step forward. I'm nervous about that cornerback group.
Well, I would be nervous too, but I believe that when you are able to get more of a solid pass rush like they were able to have, it makes your secondary better. It allows you to play better. It allows you as a corner to play more confidently and more aggressively. And one of the things that they did with their defensive line is, yes, they lost Jaron Reed, which I think they are going to miss that interior pass rush from a guy like Reed. But at the same time, I believe they become more diverse, more versatile with what Kerry Hyder can bring. They have a better five technique pass rusher than they had a year ago. So overall, I think that their pass rush has even gotten better from a year ago. It's more stable than what it was a year ago. So that part to me gets me excited, and it leads me to believe that, hey, if there are resources that I'm willing to pay less for, corner would be one of those spots that I would be confident in Pete Carroll's ability to identify talent in the secondary. I'm going to lean and trust on that more than anything else. Has he been successful with it throughout his entire career? No, there have been some misses. I mean, look at Trey Flowers. He's sitting on this roster. Have we even talked about him once about being a starter?
Right.
No, we have not. So that would be a miss on the resume. However, if I'm going to bank on him being right at a certain position and putting my faith in that, I'm going to put my faith in Pete Carroll and when it comes to the secondary. And so we'll see how that ends up playing out. But I think that's a really good point that you make, that, hey, if you don't get the pass rush there and it doesn't get home on the quarterback, then you've put an awful lot of pressure on a secondary and a cornerback group that isn't necessarily the most proven.
Now, we have about 1 minute left before we jump into NFL headlines. Before we do that, you had to choose when we did Are You Buying This? Between whether or not you thought the Seahawks would take an offensive lineman first or a corner first. And you said, I'm going to hedge my bets. I'm going to say they take either a corner or wide receiver with their first pick. Say that they leave the draft without taking a corner. Are you feeling still okay about the defense, that they overall took a step forward this offseason?
Well, that is yet to be determined, okay. Right? That's the part.
And that's fair, because we're months away from that.
Does KJ Wright come back, right? There's still a great chance that he does come back. Do they address that cornerback position with a veteran corner? There's still a lot out there. I mean, there's Richard Sherman out there. There's Cam Hayward. There's Quentin Dunbar. There's a lot of guys out there in free agency right now that I believe, you know, the Seahawks could take a chance on and have a lower price point with, that I think people would be more comfortable heading into the year with. So as of right now, I would say that they're just slightly better than where they were a year ago, knowing that there are going to be some moves that are made to finally round out this group. And so I think that this is a, if you feel like they're status quo or even better, to me that's positive from where they were a year ago. So if they're status quo, then you have a competent defense that can play complementary football. I'm not expecting this defense to be top 10. This group just needs to be top 15, and I believe that this team has a chance to get to a Super Bowl if the offense can come through and be the group that I think the expectations are and what they showed that they could be in the first 8 weeks of the season last year.
That's the state of the Seahawks union on defense. Let's jump into some NFL headlines. Jake, if you could pick one team in the league that you would love to not be even better up front on their offensive line, who would you pick? If there was a team where you would like to see them not be a really, really good offensive line.
It's Kansas City Chiefs, probably.
Yeah, well, good news. Austin Blythe has agreed to terms with the Chiefs. He's now off the market, one of the top offensive line free agents. So they bring in Joe Tooney, continue to build that, and then now bringing in Austin Blythe. And they let those two tackles go, and people were wondering, is this the price of paying big money for your quarterback? And it turns out, nope, they're just trying to shore up the offensive line and then bring in like younger, more expensive guys. I will say that, was it Greg Rosenthal or Bill Barnwell? It might have been Bill Barnwell that ranked the kind of worst contracts or worst moves of free agency so far. And Joe Tooney was one of them, not because he wasn't one of the best available players, but because they paid him so much money. I think he got the biggest contract in free agency, or certainly one of them.
Yeah, definitely one of them. And I think that when you look at a guy like Austin Blythe, he's an interesting one because he was connected here to potentially coming to Seattle because of the connection with Shane Waldron and knowing that system. And I believe that if you're the Seahawks, and as I said all along, if you look at the difference between Austin Blythe and Ethan Posick, you might be able to say, hey, look, Ethan Posick is a more physically gifted, more talented player than Austin Blythe. And look at what we were able to get out of him with the Rams because of our system. I believe that with the Seahawks and their offense and their decisions and what they have done in the offseason has been predicated off of that. As I said, from the very beginning of the Shane Waldron hire, they are pinning their hopes on Waldron being the real deal and being a guy that his offensive system and philosophy can be the biggest difference to this team from, you know, the time that they lost to the Rams in the playoffs. So with that being said, they look at Austin Blythe and say, hey, he's a good player. Chiefs obviously think he's a good enough player to protect Patrick Mahomes, but they believe that the Seahawks believe they can get the most out of Ethan Posick because of this system.
The NFL owners have approved a 17-game season for 2021. It's been 43 years since the league last made a change to its regular season schedule. However, that change starts this year. So here's what we do know. The Seahawks will face the Pittsburgh Steelers. They were not previously on the schedule. That is going to be their 17th game. Here's what else we know. We know that it's going to be a road game for everyone in the NFC this year. So that's going to flip year over year between the conferences. For instance, all the AFC teams will get home games for their 17th game, whereas the NFC teams will get road games. That'll flip next year, just to keep it fair between all the teams within that conference, so that you don't have the Rams with an extra home game, for instance. Here's what we don't know. Pretty much everything else. We don't know if this game will be literally the 17th game on the schedule, or if it'll be thrown in there week five against the Steelers. We don't know if it means we'll see expanded game day rosters. We don't know if an 18th game is coming next year or the year after, although that feels kind of inevitable. We also don't know if teams are going to get more practice squad guys, if there's going to be impacts on salaries or game salaries, anything like that. We don't know any of that yet. All we know is there's going to be an extra game this year, and for that game, the Seahawks have a road game against the Steelers.
Now, as it just comes together, this is going to be a very tough road for the Seahawks. 2020 is going to be a grind. I mean, they're going to play a lot of good teams, not only within their division, but outside of the division as well. This is going to be a really interesting year for them and see how they can hold up. Can they get to those 10 wins? I believe that they can, but it's not going to be easy. So you finish with Pittsburgh, who has a very, very good defense. They had a major collapse at the end of the year last year. Their offense and Ben Roethlisberger fell apart. It looks like they're going to try and run that back again with Big Ben. And so maybe if the Seahawks are lucky, the Steelers fall apart again with Big Ben. He just can't hold up over the course of a 17-game season. So we'll see how that ends up playing out. Stacey,
Jake.
Bit of Seahawks news here.
Okay.
Gabe Jackson is doing an interview right now with the Seattle media, and he announced to them that the Seahawks actually restructured his contract.
Oh, my.
So in his own words, he said it's gave him a little bit longer of a deal. So there isn't like a massive restructure of his contract. It still remains relatively somewhat the same, but they do maneuver some money around with Gabe Jackson's deal. I think that is notable when we talk about what their cap currently looks like. That is news that we have not heard yet. So Gabe Jackson giving us a little bit of the insight on
now, just for anyone wondering what those numbers are specifically, we don't have the details. This was just happening right now in Gabe's conversation with the media, but the Seahawks are about $1.7 million over the cap. Gabe Jackson's cap hit before this restructure is about $9.6 million. Jake, you have one more thing.
Yeah, this is just a direct quote from him.
Okay.
It was a few changes to his contract. I actually got a little bit longer deal than I had in Vegas. It's not too much different, just a little extension.
Okay, so a little extension. So you've got presumably that $9.6 million would change this year so they can extend it and move some of that money further back. But I'm sure that we'll be hearing more about that later. But the Seahawks needed to make a move. I think that's great news. I think it's great news that they managed not only to extend Gabe Jackson, but to move some of that money around. And I go back to what Brady Henderson of ESPN said when he joined us, Jake. He said, look, teams don't just restructure deals to solely create more cap space. You restructure deals because you want to keep those guys with you anyway, and creating cap space is one of the side benefits of doing that. So it sounds like that's certainly what happened here with Gabe Jackson. He's a younger guy. They want to be able to keep him. Might as well extend him. Oh, as a plus, you create a little bit more room. Let me fit in one more story here. Kyle Shanahan told the media yesterday that Jimmy G gives the 49ers the best chance to win right now. Cut six.
When you bring in a starting quarterback, when you bring in a rookie quarterback, to me, it's always better, especially on the team that you have. If you got a veteran starter there already who you like and you're comfortable winning with, that's usually the direction you want to go and not throw someone else out into the fire until they're fully ready. And that's the situation we're at. You know, you look at free agency, if it goes the other way around and you do things differently, maybe. But right now, and Jimmy, it's going to be hard to find a quarterback that gives us a better chance to win than Jimmy right now, especially even a rookie in the draft. So that's what you look into. Now, if someone wanted something for that and it can make your team better in a lot of other ways, you listen to that, but also depends on how good you feel about that rookie.
Now, Jake, how long do you expect us to wait before we see Michael McCorkle Jones make his debut for the 49ers?
It's not going to be Michael McCorkle Jones. I would be shocked.
That's what they want you to think.
That's what they want you to think.
You trade up and you give up all that capital for him?
Absolutely.
I'd throw in another first rounder to get
No, you would not.
At least. Who else do you want?
Six first rounders?
You want Bosa?
No, you would not. Yeah. I just love the dance. I love the dance that Kyle Shanahan. He just gave out three different scenarios.
Shanahan?
He gave out three scenarios. Well, having Jimmy G would be great to have. I mean, he's a guy that we feel like we can win with if we take a young guy. But if that young guy comes in and he improves and shows us that he can take over as a starter, maybe we go in that direction. Maybe if a team is interested in Jimmy Garoppolo and he can help our team win by getting other picks or another player, maybe we do that. Like, he gave you nothing. He gave you nothing in that answer.
I want to talk a bit about how the NFC West could shake out. Let's do that next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Here's how this is going to work. I have identified, you guys, four of the biggest moves in the NFC West. This is divided by what I feel is the biggest move for each team so far. There will be bigger moves, and I'm not saying that each of these moves is going to directly impact how many wins the team is going to get per se, but it's what I feel are the four biggest moves so far for each team. So I'll get to the Seahawks last, but we'll start with the Rams, the addition of Matthew Stafford. Duh. For the 49ers, now, really what's going to be impacting them being competitive in the NFC West is going to be the return of a lot of their injured starters. But their biggest move so far, it's got to be this trade. Moving up to number three overall, so it's going to be the new rookie quarterback for San Francisco. Don't even know if he's going to be starting, but that's the biggest move so far. Biggest move for Arizona, addition of J.J. Watt and later A.J. Green. So far in free agency. And then for Seattle.
Don't forget Rodney Hudson, too.
And then for Seattle, it's Shane Waldron as the new offensive coordinator.
Mm.
So if we're looking at the NFC West, the four biggest moves, the biggest single move for each team so far, which is the most impactful? Because this is going to be, I think, still the toughest division in football.
It will be the toughest division in football. I think that the upgrades or the decisions that each team in this division has made, they have gotten better. I don't think there's a whole lot of wild card teams in terms of the way that they've gone about approaching free agency. I guess the Arizona Cardinals are the ones that have the most wild card picks because J.J. Watt, he's had a lot of injuries over the last 4 years. You don't know if you're going to get a healthy J.J. Watt and a very productive one, or are you going to get an injured one? A.J. Green, same thing. Is he at this point in his career, is he going to, does he still have the ability to be an impact level receiver in the league? Those are big questions that you have. In regards to what the Rams and the 49ers are doing, it's more in line with the strengths of their team right now. And I think that they're very directly positive additions by subtraction, meaning draft picks or players that they have traded for. Matt Stafford, to me, is definitely an upgrade over Jared Goff. I think that he is a much more dynamic quarterback and has a way higher ceiling than what Jared Goff has. And now you see the Rams, I think they'll still be good defensively, but they're not going to be number one in the league like they were a year ago. They made a concession to say, hey, we might be not as good on defense this next year, but we're certainly going to be better on offense. They made a move to go in that direction. The 49ers, they are in a position where, as you said, they have so much talent coming back that was injured a season ago that they are missing that piece at quarterback. They're missing a guy that can be a difference maker, that can be dynamic for them. And clearly they view Jimmy Garoppolo as a guy that can be a game manager and can win games within their system, but not necessarily get them over the top, get them over the hump in a very competitive division. So I think that what the Rams and the 49ers have done are the most dramatic. And I think that the Seahawks, their change being as minimal as it is, could be the one that, when it's all said and done, make the biggest impact with Shane Waldron. If you can tap into what they did the first 8 weeks of the season, Stacey, and not necessarily roll out the same offense, but the same production, and you keep them more consistent, and you allow that production to stay consistent throughout the season, I mean, that's a very exciting and very scary proposition for anybody in this division.
The only thing I don't know that they'll stress getting back to is scoring. Obviously, you want to score more points than the opponent, but through the first several weeks of the season, they were the highest scoring unit in the league on offense. They fell to the middle of the road in the second half of the season. I don't think Pete Carroll, I would imagine, is going to put an emphasis on getting 30 points per game. I don't think that's going to be of the utmost importance to him. I think the important thing is going to be score more than them, but also protect the ball and keep them from getting into the end zone, right? So he's going to be fine with scoring 12 points, scoring 19
He's going to be fine with it.
If they score 12 and it's a tough game where they keep the opponent scoreless, the first thing he's going to say coming out is we kept them out of the end zone.
Great. You can say that for a game or two, but you know you're not going to win a Super Bowl that way.
Well,
that's what you're pinning on, you need to, when we talk about status quo and being better, I'll change my answer. Then you got worse. Because if that's your strategy and that's how you're going to approach this season, you don't have a defense that's good enough to be that. You don't have a Legion of Boom type of defense that you can lean on and count on, you know, scoring 15 to under 20 points a game. You have to be in an era now where you are scoring, I believe, and you have to be towards the top of the NFL.
So let's say scoring. 30 is tops. The 30 is tops. Green Bay was 31 last year.
I think
year.
The goal is to be anywhere from 27 to 30 points per game.
You'd be top five.
And that's, I think, what the goal is. You don't make a decision to move on from Brian Schottenheimer unless you feel like, as an offense, you have the capability to maintain that high level of play throughout the entire season.
I don't think scoring a lot of points has ever been top priority for Pete Carroll. And I don't see that. That's the only thing where I look at, when I look at the things that stood out about the first several weeks of the Seahawks offense last year, scoring is the first thing that comes to mind. It's not just efficiency. They were efficient. They were using the running backs well. I think, importantly, they were getting the running backs involved in the pass game. Chris Carson, I think at one point, was leading all running backs with receiving touchdowns. I think he had maybe three, unless I'm thinking this wrong, or maybe it was just receptions. But either way, they were getting running backs incorporated in the pass game. They looked explosive, but they were scoring. They were laying down points.
Yeah.
I don't see that being a point of emphasis.
Why not, though?
Because it never has been.
What the Green Bay Packers did this last year. It was not leaving your defense in a tough spot. It was playing a style of football that he actually likes and appreciates. When he talked about wanting to run the ball more, it was wanting to be better at counteracting and adjusting to what defenses are doing rather than banging your head against a wall. And I think that as you look at that, it makes you a more dynamic offense. It inherently makes this group better to where you can consistently score more points. And do I think he's going to change this up where it's going to be spread offense and you know, the emphasis and the acquisitions are clearly going to go one-sided? No, I mean, that clearly hasn't been the case.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that in Pete Carroll's mind, they were very close to being that type of team where they could play complementary defense, and they had a very dynamic offense that could put points up on the board. And this change to your offensive coordinator was not to pull back the reins on it, but to make it better and more efficient and more counteractive to what defenses are trying to do to you.
All right, what I need to know is coming up next. Send in your questions now, 710-710. Any question you have, what I need to know, right around the corner.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
Text us your question, 710-710. Any question you want for what I need to know. Before I get to the first question, we were talking about how Brooke, Jake's wife, is just the most savage April Fool's prankster. Pranking the kids, pranking Jake. It's all day. It's nonstop. Jake is getting some PTSD. April Fool's Day is coming back around. He's getting nervous. It's the worst day of his life every single year. Well, someone texted in earlier and they said, this is risky. They said I'm assuming they're a smaller company. There's three employees. And they were thinking for April Fool's of all, they dress very casually for the office and they're all going to dress up in like suits as though they're going to go for an interview. And to prank the boss so the boss thinks they're all doing interviews for other jobs that day.
Well,
that's risky.
Yeah. Pranks
risky.
On you when you lose your job. I don't know if I'd go. I don't know if I'd do that unless I got a really good relationship with my boss. I don't. Bold move.
What I need to know is Golden Tate coming back a real possibility?
I don't think so.
I think it's a possibility. I don't think it'll happen.
I don't think it's a real possibility. I think that what would be more likely is that you see them take a receiver in the draft. That's just my guess. And typically, also the other thing to keep in mind with this third receiver, what they look for is speed. They typically have not gone for possession receivers in this offense. So Golden Tate at this stage in his career is not the burner, not the guy, the deep threat that he once was. Mm-hmm. He is a third down guy. He is a chain mover type of receiver. And I don't think that that's something that the Seahawks covet or really try to go after. Why did they bring P. Rich in for a trial run in training camp this last year? It's because of that speed. It's because of the belief that, hey, he's a guy that can get over the top on defenses. And so that's where that's why I don't believe the Golden Tate situation is really a real possibility, because it just doesn't fit what they like to do offensively or what they traditionally have done.
Do you see Seattle being content with their three draft picks in 2021, or do you see John and Pete trading back and acquiring more? There's no way I see them sticking with three. Just so you guys know, it's not weird for a team to have four. The Saints had four last year. The Patriots have had four recently. Gosh, who was the other team that had four recently? I don't remember. But the Jets were the last team to have three picks, and I think 2009. That's not a lot at all. And there's just no way. I don't see John Schneider sticking with three picks. My mind would be blown.
No, I would be too. But the only way that would happen, if there was somebody that fell to them with that 56 overall pick, that it would be a dream situation at whatever position of need. Offensive line, receiver, cornerback. It's just a can't miss opportunity for them. They take it, right? I mean, it's got to be like a DK Metcalf type of situation at whatever position that they want. So I have a hard time. What I envision happening is they end up trading down and they get 2 third-round picks out of it, or they get a, you know, even a later second and maybe a third, or something along those lines. So that's what I'm anticipating on draft day.
I need to know, do wristbands and tape really help, or is it mainly for looks? Well, it depends what you're using it for. So, for instance, offensive linemen use it so you don't, like, break your fingers, or because you already have broken fingers and you don't want to mess them up even more. So they put on tape, like you have to use a knife to get it off. Or not an actual knife, but it's like a little X-Acto knife.
Yeah, it's a shark.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those things are widely coveted in a locker room. I'll tell you what, be able to cut those off your ankles, because usually there's like a massive line for one of these things in a locker room. But wristbands, the only time I ever found great use in wristbands was when I was in Miami. I was sweating like crazy. And there were a couple times, like my first couple days in training camp, where the ball actually, when I was going to throw it, it slipped out of my hands. And for the life of me, I couldn't figure it out. I was like, why is this happening? This never has happened to me before, and it's happened to me multiple times in just a matter of a couple days. Then it finally clicked to me, like, it's because I'm sweating. Like, there's just sweat dripping down my arm. And so I got wristbands, and that changed for me immediately. But that's the only time that I would ever say wristbands actually work, and they're not just an accessory.
Someone said, who are you guys pulling for in tonight's tourneys? So for men or women's. Obviously, Gonzaga. So it's in the men's, it's 6 USC versus number 1 Gonzaga.
Let's go, Zags. 15.
Then you got UCLA versus number 1 Michigan coming up at 6:57 is the tip-off time on ESPN.
You got to root for the Pac-12.
You got to.
I mean, UCLA is Arizona's arch rival, so I'll let you guys root for the Pac-12. I'll root for Michigan.
You're going to root for Michigan?
Yeah. Why would you ever root for your arch rival?
It's true. Stanford. So in the women's, it's Stanford, Louisville at 9, and then South Carolina versus Texas at 7. So you got 1 Pac-12 women's.
Well, you got Anna Wilson of the Saints.
Yeah, Anna Wilson.
She's been balling in the tournament, by the way. She's been like Gary Payton out there in the tournament, taking people's lunch money. She's gone 100% from the field so far in this tournament.
Wasn't she the Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year?
Yes, she was.
Co-Defensive Player of the Year?
Yes, she was.
Yeah.
I was now just looking through the schedule. Okay. What I need to know. First of all, Jen in Beaverton asked us, and I don't know particular jelly bean flavors, but she said her favorite jelly bean flavor is black licorice. And Jen,
what?
Love you, but that's disgusting. I don't know anyone that likes black licorice. Yeah. I don't know a single person.
And especially in a jelly bean flavor?
Oh, it's awful, Jen. Awful. Gosh. What are you doing?
If you want to torture me, I mean, that's one way to do it. You might be able to get me to talk.
I guess.
Ugh.
Horrible.
No, I can't do that.
We didn't have time for this question, but someone said, does Earl Thomas find a team after the draft? You guys, I, like, low-key kind of stopped thinking about Earl Thomas as a free agent and just kind of was like, oh, I wonder if he'll ever eventually sign somewhere, but I didn't actually
think most NFL teams have forgotten that he's a free agent.
Yeah, I would say so, too. I think that Earl Thomas and all the off-the-field antics and everything that he's gone through, I don't think any team is going to be willing to sign up for that. I don't think so.
All right. He is Jake Heaps. I'm Stacey Ross. Curtis Rogers on the board. That'll do it for us today. Do not go anywhere, though. More sports talk continues next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.